Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Today is Thursday, July 9th. What to know today about President Trump's threat to cut funding for schools and the Supreme Court ruling about religious rights and birth control. Plus, we'll explain the audit Facebook just failed, the latest plan for college sports, and Tinder's new feature. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview about ethics in a health crisis and how even some experts got it wrong. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. President Trump is giving American schools an ultimatum. Reopen this fall or lose federal funds. He also tweeted criticism about the CDC's current guidelines for extra safety measures at school, calling them very tough and expensive. But quickly, the backlash followed. Governors condemned the president's push for schools to be all in person, saying he has no authority over school districts' plans. The nation's two largest school districts also seem to be standing their ground. New York just announced plans to reopen only 1 to 3 days a week, and LA County's public health officer told school officials to plan for remote learning because of the surge in cases they're seeing there. Also, just hours after the president's criticism of the CDC's original suggestions, administration officials told the Wall Street Journal the CDC would provide new school guidance next week, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, the most populous states in the U.S., California, Texas, and Florida, drove the country to another single-day record of confirmed COVID-19 cases. Overall, the country just surpassed 3 million confirmed infections less than a month after reaching the 2 million mark. Also, the White House coronavirus coordinator now says she's looking into what prompted the uptick in cases across the Sun Belt in recent weeks. Like many other public health officials, Dr. Deborah Birx is urging people who live in those hotspots to wear masks and avoid crowds. Well, two prestigious schools are suing the Trump administration. Harvard and MIT filed a lawsuit over a new policy concerning international students. Remember, we told you earlier this week, U.S. immigration officials announced foreign students will not be allowed to stay in the U.S. if university classes move online. Instead, they'll have two options: transfer to a school that offers in-person classes or leave the U.S. and take classes in their home country. So in the lawsuit, the universities are asking the courts to pause the policy ASAP while the case gets sorted out. Harvard's president did not hold back either, saying the policy's cruelty was surpassed only by its recklessness. For now, the Trump administration said it can't comment on a pending lawsuit, but the State Department did defend the new rule, saying it's temporary and gives students who are U.S. citizens more flexibility for physical distancing on campuses. Ultimately, it will be up to a federal judge whether to let the policy stand. The Army officer who was a key witness during the impeachment hearings last year says he's decided to retire from the military, and his lawyer blames President Trump. You may remember the name, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. He's a decorated Iraq War veteran who's been in the military for more than 20 years. Many people did not know him until his public testimony in November. Vindman had said some of President Trump's actions regarding Ukraine were, quote, inappropriate and improper. Of course, ultimately, the president was impeached by the House but found not guilty by the Senate. Well, fast forward to February. Trump fired Vindman from his role with the National Security Council but said what happens next is up to the military. Well, now, Vindman's lawyer says instead, the president ran a, quote, campaign of bullying, intimidation, and retaliation. In recent weeks, there have been questions raised about Vindman's future and his expected promotion to colonel. Vindman apparently feels he'll forever be limited by political backlash. President Trump hasn't commented about this, but top Pentagon leaders like Secretary of Defense Mark Esper have insisted Vindman was not targeted for political reasons. Either way, Vindman is now retiring. On Twitter, he wrote that he and his family were looking forward to the next chapter of their lives. Employers can opt out of offering free birth control coverage, citing religious or moral grounds. That was the ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court this week. Right now, most employers do offer the birth control coverage at no cost. The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, actually required it starting back in 2010. But later, the Trump administration added an exception to that rule, saying employers would not have to offer the free birth control if they cite those moral or religious reasons. 7 out of the 9 Supreme Court justices agreed to let that exception stand, giving President Trump a victory. They say the Trump administration has the authority to make that change, and it followed the correct procedures. The majority was all the conservative justices, plus Justices Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer. The AP reports the decision could end up leaving more than 70,000 women without free birth control. By the way, get ready for another highly anticipated Supreme Court ruling expected today. It will decide whether Congress gets to see the president's tax returns and other financial records he's been fighting to keep private. We'll, of course, update you tomorrow. All right, we have more news coming up, but first let's take a quick break for our sponsor. Do you ever feel like you want something similar to what The Newsworthy is for news, but for nonfiction books, where you get the key things to know in just about 10 or 15 minutes? If so, say hello to a unique app called Blinkist. Blinkist gives you the best key takeaways from over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories. Blinkist condenses them down into blinks, where you can read or listen in just 15 minutes. For me, Blinkist complements my regular reading. I'll be taking my time getting through a full book while also getting additional knowledge, tips, and perspectives from a variety of books on Blinkist. Check out the bestseller Why We Sleep for the science behind sleep, or learn more from Mark Cuban with How to Win at the Sport of Business. And Blinkist has a special offer. Go to Blinkist.com/news to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership and up to 65% off audiobooks that are yours to keep forever. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/news to get 25% off a premium membership and a 7-day free trial. Now, back to the news. Facebook failed its first ever civil rights audit. Specifically, auditors found the social media giant is allowing hate, bigotry, and manipulation on its platform. But before we get into all of that, here's a little background. Auditors were handpicked by Facebook back in 2018. They spent 2 years looking into all kinds of things, like content moderation, advertising practices, and how Facebook may be contributing to extreme views in America. Then the report was released just yesterday, and the results aren't good. Here are a few specifics. The audit says Facebook waited too long to fact-check posts. It also found Facebook has not done a good enough job removing hate speech and misinformation that targets minority and religious groups. And the platform's structure could be helping radicalize users. That's because the way the algorithm works, people may only see posts that agree with their own pre-existing beliefs. Auditors recommend Facebook commit to preventing bias and discrimination before it happens. And remember, this comes in the middle of an advertiser boycott already happening. Several well-known companies took part in a campaign to pull ads from Facebook and Instagram during the month of July because of these same issues. So Facebook says it's already making improvements. COO Sheryl Sandberg says the social network will start banning more ads and will create a new role to oversee their new civil rights efforts. To be continued. The Ivy League is suspending all fall sports because of the pandemic. It's the first Division I conference to do this. The league says football, soccer, volleyball, and other athletics will not return until January 2021 at the earliest. This affects 8 elite colleges like Harvard, Princeton, Yale, and Cornell. And although none of them have powerhouse sports programs, the decision could still cause a ripple effect. It might pave the way for other Division I conferences to follow suit. In fact, the Wall Street Journal says that's already happened once during this pandemic. Back in March, the Ivy League canceled its basketball tournaments. Then, just a few days later, the NCAA called off March Madness. Stay tuned. Brooks Brothers, which was founded in 1818, has filed for bankruptcy. The company is best known for making business apparel like suits, ties, and shirts, and it's famous for dressing 40 U.S. presidents. But even though it endured 2 world wars, the COVID-19 pandemic was apparently too much. Reuters reports the crisis made things worse, but really the company was already facing problems. For example, even before stay-at-home orders, many businesses relaxed dress codes, making the traditional suit and tie much less popular. That said, the brand hopes to live on even through bankruptcy. CNBC reports the company is looking for a new owner, and it still plans to reopen a majority of its stores when the pandemic eases. Amazon is forcing its sellers to be a little more transparent. Their names and addresses will soon be on display. The idea is this will give shoppers a better idea of who they're actually buying from. And in the process, it could cut back on the number of counterfeit items that get sold on the site. Amazon has had some big issues with counterfeits. The Verge reports last year alone, it shut down some 6 billion suspicious listings. This change goes into effect September 1st. Tinder is testing out a new video chat feature. It's called Face to Face, and it essentially lets people go on virtual dates within the app. When users opt in, a split-screen video pops up. The Verge reports the feature is being tested on some users in Virginia, Illinois, Georgia, and Colorado, as well as a dozen other countries. If all goes well, it could roll out nationwide in the U.S. and in more countries. And that's it for the main 10 minutes of news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, our conversation is about ethics during a global crisis. We talk about a lot in the next several minutes, including how to balance the needs of public health and the economy, what health experts could have done better from the beginning, and why issues around developing a vaccine are so tricky. Our guest today is Dr. Danielle Allen. She's a Harvard University professor who runs the Safra Center for Ethics there and leads their COVID-19 response initiative. Earlier this year, they published a first-of-its-kind roadmap to pandemic resilience. Her many accomplishments also include receiving $500,000 award just last month from the Library of Congress for achievement in the study of humanity. So here's my conversation with Dr. Danielle Allen. Thanks so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
Hi, Erica. Thank you for having me.
So one of the biggest ethical questions of this pandemic is really how to think about public health and stopping the virus versus the economic impact of shutting everything down and people not going anywhere. So what's your take?
We don't really actually have to think about a trade-off between the economy and health. In the very beginning, there was an emergency moment where we did need to close things down because we couldn't really see what was happening. We didn't have enough scientific understanding. We didn't have enough data. But that's why things were closed down, was to give people time to figure out the right strategy of response. The goal of responding to COVID is to figure out how to protect health, protect the economy, and protect liberties simultaneously. We can do this by really building out our public health infrastructure to do diagnostic viral testing and contact tracing to follow the chains of transmission of the disease and make sure people who are positive are in quarantine or isolation. If we can do that work together, then we can suppress COVID and also protect the economy.
Where would you say we are now, though? Because some states continue with reopening. Others are having to reverse some of those plans because we're seeing an uptick in how the virus is spreading.
If we had that infrastructure in place, our reopenings would be secure. It's the fact that we only partially invested in diagnostic testing and in contact tracing that has left us vulnerable as we reopen. So what we really want to do is make sure that we're very clear on the infrastructure investments we need to be able to get people to test. That means public messaging to really share the message. Know your status. If you think you've been exposed, you need to go get a test. You shouldn't have to pay for tests. So you want to make sure that your state is structuring things, that tests are very broadly available. If you have any symptoms at all, or if you think you've been exposed, you should be getting a test. Then we have to invest in health workers who are able to collect those samples. And then we have to invest in people who do contact tracing and really alert people about exposure so they can be part of that process of knowing your status, helping to break the chain in your community so that we can get case incidents back to near zero.
How do you think about public health and personal freedoms? Because I think that question is at least one of the things that has contributed to mask wearing becoming pretty political, right?
Absolutely. But it's the problem with that is that mask wearing is not about an individual decision. So people have to remember that diseases are social phenomena. They're about human connection. When we use the metaphor about something going viral in the internet, that's because viruses go viral, right? That's what they do. They are by definition social phenomena. So when I wear a mask, it's not about me, actually. It's about, am I taking the social phenomenon of a virus that's transmitting out of circulation or not? Am I contributing to taking the virus out of circulation or not? That's the question that each of us has to ask individually.
Kind of the first messaging that we got from the CDC was not to wear a mask unless you're a medical professional. And then later it became you must wear a mask. How does kind of that conflicting advice happen? And what responsibility do experts have to make the messaging really clear, even when there's uncertainty?
Experts have a number one responsibility to make the messaging clear, even in uncertainty. And I have to say, I think that is not something that we deserve an A on in this country through the course of this pandemic. We had a lot of mixed messages from the places that mattered most, for example, the CDC. So what happened is basically that in the very beginning, the CDC was very worried about a need to ration the surgical masks, the highly protective N95 masks. And they were so worried about the need to ration those for medical providers that they told everybody else not to wear masks. Already, it was clear that general mask wearing is beneficial for a disease of this kind. That was proven true with SARS in 2003 in Asia, for example. So we already had that. knowledge. So we really needed two messages at the very beginning. Don't use an N95 because we need to reserve those for our medical professionals, but go find some kind of face covering because everything helps. That's the message we should have started with. And I'm going to just put it out there and say, I think that this country will need a commission in the same way that after 9/11, we had a 9/11 commission that really dug into why was it that our intelligence agencies left us so vulnerable. We did not have what we needed at the start of this pandemic from the CDC and other leading agencies. And I do think that we're going to have to do some, mop up learning about what happened.
Another thing that I think will need to be addressed is that the New York Times recently analyzed federal data showing Black and Latino people have been three times as likely to become infected and nearly twice as likely to die than white people here in the U.S. How is this happening and what action is needed to address that problem?
So there are a number of things that contribute to those statistics. The first is that we have to remember that we talk about the economy having been closed, but in fact, it was never fully closed. Essential workers were always out there in the economy, and that's 40% of the economy, actually. And among essential workers, people of color are overrepresented demographically speaking. So just by virtue of essential workers being out there at a point in time before we had good testing, before we had good PPE supplies and so forth, Black and brown people were overexposed to COVID. And that circulation of disease started in neighborhoods, in communities. So that's the first point. The second point is that it's also the case that this country has significant health disparities and health inequities that track racial and ethnic lines. And so many people are already vulnerable in relationship to health because of pre-existing lack of access to healthcare.
Yeah, and I think it's obviously something that's bigger than just this pandemic.
This is a moment for recognizing that the vulnerability of some is the vulnerability of all. So that inadequate or inequitable access to healthcare meant that parts of our society were more vulnerable to COVID. But once COVID gets a foothold, it spreads to everybody. So that health vulnerability that we have that is more concentrated in minority communities is vulnerability for our whole society. And we need to recognize that our fates are entangled.
So what needs to be considered, especially when it comes to ethics, before and after a vaccine is released, especially when we're working to release a vaccine in record time?
So they are working on trying the virus out faster in human, or rather, sorry, the vaccine faster in human beings than they would do in other circumstances. So instead of sort of stepping up from one category of animal to another and finally to human beings, they've gone straight to human beings. So there's a certain way in which there's an analogy to asking people to serve in a military context where there's a higher risk to them than would be the case in a normal vaccine trial. So the governments around the world are all investing in vaccines, and people are investing in a multiplicity of kinds of vaccine. And the reason they're doing this is to have as many as possible lines of production available as quickly as possible, because obviously this is a gigantic planet. Everybody on the planet, in some sense, will need a vaccine. And so there will be real challenges to figure out order of priority for distribution. You don't want the market as such to determine distribution, because that would permit the well-to-do to buy up all the first vaccines and leave the world's poor exposed to the disease. And that would not be acceptable. So there are going to be a lot of things to work out with regard to a kind of global framework for distribution. Before that point, we just need more clarity about what we're talking about anyway. Is it something like the flu shot that will have to be distributed, every year? Or is it something that is a kind of one and done sort of distribution? So until we have answers to those questions or sort of scientific questions, it's harder to lay out a full picture about what a just and fair distribution system would be.
As always, you can read more about this topic and our guest in today's episode notes on thenewsworthy.com. And be sure to share if you enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with your news roundup for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.